This weekend starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Got a phone, got a job. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
The competitive job market has some employers hiring people after just a single phone conversation. Find out where the requirements are minimal.
Ready for something new to sip? Here are the brewers putting cannabis in their beer cans.
The runner and the doctor who had an emergency encounter during the New York City Marathon at mile 16.
And how to avoid losing everything to a scam this holiday season.
I'm getting calls on a daily basis from folks, the old Microsoft scam. My father-in-law got hit with one of these things before he died, and I think he dropped something like $10,000 in the hope he was going to win a free Cadillac, and of course he never got the car. It was a scam, but I'm pretty sure he died thinking the car was still coming.
Tech analyst Rob Enderle, himself a victim, has tips on avoiding today's well-designed schemes. He's here in about 25 minutes. Eager employers trying to lure workers in the tightest job market in 50 years are hiring some candidates sight unseen at times after one phone interview. The practice has become most common in seasonal work, especially retail, although it is spreading among certain in-demand white-collar roles, such as engineers, IT professionals, and teachers. More from Wall Street Journal reporter Chip Cutter. Chip, what is the landscape like?
Well, it's really interesting. This is the tightest job market we've had since 1969. The unemployment rate is at 3.7%. And so a number of employers across the country are saying, we'll hire you after a single phone interview. All you need, if you can meet our requirements, you have a phone interview, we'll hire you sight unseen.
That is, is it fair to call that desperation?
Well, I mean, I think there's certainly an eagerness out there to get people in these jobs as quickly as possible. We talk with a number of recruiters and consultants and the companies themselves, and they say that speed really matters here, that someone will drop off, they'll get another job elsewhere if you don't get them in the door as quickly as possible.
Explain some of the anecdotes you picked up.
Well, so I talked with somebody who was applying for a seasonal job at Macy's for this holiday season. He applied one evening. 12 hours later, he got an email from Macy's. They said they'd be calling him shortly. After a 25-minute phone interview, they offered him the job, paying $12.25 an hour at a store near Portland, Oregon. And this person said he was really confused by it. He thought it was a scam, perhaps. He felt it was way too easy to get hired that way. And Macy's has told us that they're just looking to hire as quickly as possible. They certainly still do in-person interviews, but they have found a lot of value in this kind of phone interviewing system.
Boy, I guess it's a good system, right? I mean, it offers some measure of vetting.
It does. I mean, I think that's the question here, and that's something that a lot of kind of recruiters and hiring experts have posed, and they've said that ultimately more interviews and lots of in-person interviews, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get a better qualified employee. And so a number of them are saying, let's try this. Let's try to hire this way and see what happens. CVS Health is piloting an experiment where workers at its distribution centers, they don't meet with someone until they get the job itself. They're hired based on how they do in a virtual job tryout and an online assessment. That's
wow.
How a recruiter bases whether they're going to be hired or not. And then they actually meet with someone on their first day on the job. They actually meet with a human when they arrive for work. So it is new. It's a different type of hiring, but I think a lot of employers say they need to be creative right now, just given what a tight market it is.
Well, you mentioned the word recruiter twice so far. Are those guys even needed these days?
Well, companies still need them because they need to be able to kind of get these workers interested in their jobs. What they're not finding is many people just necessarily coming to them. Recruiters have to go out and try to find workers, find people who might be up for these jobs. So I think they still feel like they have some job security that are still needed. But certainly, I think a lot of them are looking for more creative, more efficient ways to do their jobs.
Well, we're speaking with Chip Cutter, Wall Street Journal reporter who covers management and workplace issues. He's got a piece entitled, Yes, You're Hired, No, We Don't Need to Meet You First. I think I read or heard somewhere that might be like Amazon or one of these big groups, like they don't even require a resume.
The That's right. They actually put that in their job, job postings. They say, you know, no resume, no interview required. Now, I talked to an Amazon spokesperson about this, and they said you still do need to meet with someone before you'll get hired. Oftentimes, that means coming to a hiring fair and talking with someone informally. So it's not the interview that you might think of, but you still do need to show up and show your face before they'll hire you. But you can see that that's part of the pledge these companies are making. It's easy to get a job here. You know, throw your resume, throw your hat in the ring, and you'll get hired quickly.
But the risk, though, of hiring a bad apple, I mean, that can be costly. You go over the effort to obviously interview someone over the phone, bring them in, start training them, then figure out that they're not the right fit, right? I mean,
It is. This is a costly process for companies, and it's also costly in ways, for example, if the person who's hired this way doesn't interact well with customers or doesn't seem to fit in well with the team. There are parts of this that are really kind of problematic, and some have said that they've seen examples where people who have done these phone interviews, for example, it's a different person who actually shows up for the job themselves. So there are some risks in this, and companies try to do the best they can to make sure that they're, you know, paying attention to all of these. But certainly, their hiring sight unseen can raise some unexpected problems and issues for companies.
Thanks, Chip. Wall Street Journal reporter Chip Cutter. It is 12 minutes after the hour on this weekend. Thanks for being with us. Navigating the current media landscape can be quite tricky, and even the most seasoned media consumer can fall victim to a fake news story. Therefore, when it comes to the news, it's never been more important to learn how to pick apart fact from fiction. With guidance, here's Barbara McCormick, Vice President of News Education at the Newseum in Washington, D.C. Barbara, how do we get better at this?
First, slowing down and being a critical consumer. Taking just a second to find out the source of the information that you're consuming. That's step number one.
And then beyond that?
Beyond that, there's lots of steps. There's lots of tips that can help you. And if you go to our website at newseumed.org, you will find a whole suite on media literacy resources. And our newest is Fact Finder. Fact Finder kind of raids the journalist toolbox. And it uses the resources that journalists use every day, and we bring them to your news feed, from doing a quality Google search to finding source, evidence, facts, and then being a quality news producer yourself.
That's interesting because, I mean, there are news sites, I guess, you may not recognize that are perfectly legitimate, right? But it's
right.
Figuring these out that's the problem.
Absolutely. And going to an About page, an About section, they'll tell you who they are. They'll tell you what they're doing, what their goals are, and if they don't have an About page, well, there's your first sign that this is not share-worthy.
Mm. What's the biggest challenge these days? Is it identifying the right source? Is it learning how to think critically?
Yeah, it's all of those things. But what we're really up against is this polarizing content. We're being, consumers, unfortunately, sometimes are being manipulated and not realizing it. So it's the good old, propaganda. Those seeds of propaganda starting there. So first of all, realizing what the information is meant to do. You know, is it meant to impact you emotionally? I don't know if folks fully understand the algorithms out there that are, you know, identifying them and making them, you know, perfect partners with some of the purveyors of propaganda for their information.
Mm. I have no issues with social media, generally speaking, but the folks who say peddle fake news on social media, generally speaking, is this something that is deliberate with an intent to deceive, or is it sometimes people just trying to be funny and see if they can make something go viral?
Absolutely. People create fake news for a multitude of reasons. It can be a hoax. I'm trying to be funny. I'm trying to sell you something to make money. And the most nefarious would be to influence your actions and beliefs.
What's being done, say, at the college level to train, you know, today's young adults to be aware of this stuff when they graduate?
Yep, they're using our tools as well. We have a large group of college professors that are using newseumed.org to educate their students. These resources work for all ages. Fact Finder would be appropriate for our grandparents, you know, our parents, grandparents, and teachers in the classroom.
Hmm. We're speaking with Barbara McCormick. She's Vice President of Newseum Education. Do you find sometimes that these things are a phase and we just need to catch up with what's happening?
Yeah, you know what? The phase here is it's the platform. It's the technology. Yeah. Fake news is not new. We've caught up with dealing with the other platforms. So figuring out how social media is going to work and impact us, I don't think that's going anywhere. And I think today's generations are going to be very upset if we try to regulate and too much policy and control on these platforms. So what does that mean? We have to be better critical consumers, news consumers. We have to take responsibility and find great tools like FactFinder to help us.
So, for example, FactFinder might work. Let's say I come across a story online. I don't recognize the source, but it's something along the lines of Russia has repurchased Alaska. What do you type in that subject into FactFinder or the source into FactFinder? How does it work?
Yeah, so if you're looking for something to help you with source, we have Newstrition. That is another one of our tools, and that is a Chrome extension. And when you look up a source with Newstrition, it will tell you all the background information. It will give you everything you need to make a critical decision about whether or not you can trust this source. So you put your news story in there, and it tells you who produced it. And right there is half the battle for the consumer, yeah. Understanding where did this come from and what's the purpose.
Thanks, Barbara. Barbara McCormick, Vice President of News Education at the Newseum. The challenges of living in a fake news media landscape, by the way. A BBC survey last year found 79% of adults in 18 countries agreed they, quote, worry about what is real and what is fake on the internet. 79%. It is 21 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for joining us on this Thanksgiving weekend. One of the hottest sellers this holiday season for kids, squishy toys. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
No, not Tickle Me Elmo or fidget spinners. This year's hottest holiday toy is the squishy. Ellen Byron of the Wall Street Journal joins us now with some details. Ellen, what are squishies?
Squishies are very soft foam toys that are usually in the shape of a cute animal or fun character or even some food like bread. And kids and adults love squishing these foam toys and watching them rise back up.
How long have they been around?
Well, they have been around for some years, but in the U.S., in mainstream retailers, they've really only popped up in the last year and a half or so.
Ellen, how popular have they become?
Well, this year's sales through September have totaled about $100 million, and that's compared with $4 million in the previous year. So they're a very hot selling toy.
How much is a squishy going to set you back?
There's a big range of squishy prices. You can buy one, a small one, for about $3. Then they can go upwards of $20, depending on the size and the character and the quality of the foam.
Speaking of quality, Ellen, your story talks a lot about the squishiness of the squishies. What works? What doesn't work? What's that all about?
Well, here's what my reporting taught me, was that anybody likes to squeeze or poke these toys, but the connoisseurs really judge a good squishy by how long it takes to regain its shape. And toy makers recognized this, and they have been very carefully scrutinizing their foam to make sure that it rises at just the right pace. Some people will say that one of these foam squishies needs to rise as slowly as possible. For some fans, they can be too slow. For some, that can be too fast. And so it's a very fine line.
We're speaking with Ellen Byron of the Wall Street Journal. Ellen, are these toys something that came out of those like hand grip stress things? Those have been around for a long time.
The squishy fans will tell you very firmly no, because a stress ball is firm to the touch and it requires effort to squeeze it. Squishies feel very soft and mushy and require very little effort to squish. And so this crowd is very fast to tell you that these are not stress balls, but that squishies should be very satisfying to hold and soft to the touch.
The squishy crowd, are we talking all kids, adults, a mix?
A mix. And they have a very big following online. I spoke with a handful of online squishy stars who have thousands of followers, in one case millions of followers. They enjoy sharing their collections of squishies and squeezing them one by one so that viewers can watch how slowly they regain their shape.
So, Helen, is this something people are collecting?
Yes, they are collecting them. They are sharing them online. Some kids like to trade them. And apparently a pretty easy toy to store because you can just squish them in a box and or a drawer and away you go.
Is this another fad?
Toy analysts and retailers have told me no, that this has actually lasted longer than what's considered a fad. And part of the reason why is because toy makers, squishy makers, have been evolving this toy. So they started out as being cute and squishy, but toy makers have started launching collectible series of squishies. They've added exotic scents to them, they have changed their sizes quite a bit. And so all of that has made it an expanding category.
Thanks, Ellen. Wall Street Journal reporter Ellen Byron with this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka. Ellen, by the way, references a 30-year-old woman in the story who has a YouTube channel that shows her 1,100-something squishies. One video is 49 minutes long, and it shows her hands squeezing more than 700 of these things. It's been viewed more than 3 million times, sometimes by adults just looking to relax. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and advanced manufacturing. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Thanks for spending time with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka coming up this half hour. How to use holiday slacker time to your advantage at the office. Also, brewers are starting to put cannabis into their beer cans. And a runner and a doctor who saved her during the New York City Marathon. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. One of the things that makes many scams work is that they make you part of the effort to fool yourself. A huge problem is that the folks who get caught up in the scam, of course, will attack people who catch onto it, almost as if they were religious heretics. So says tech analyst Rob Enderle, who's here to suggest ways to avoid falling for one, because there are folks trying to trick us out of our money daily, and the approaches are getting ever more sophisticated. He's founder of the Enderle Group. Rob, you've got experience here.
The trigger event for me was that I invested in a property called Sanctuary Belize a few years back, and of course I was lucky enough to bail out. But that particular property was just picked up by the Federal Trade Commission and highlighted as one of the biggest scams they'd ever run into, with about $100 million wandering off, according to what they allege. So that's what woke me up to this and got me to decide to write about how to avoid being scammed. Because I don't know about you, but I'm getting calls on a daily basis from folks either that the old Microsoft scam. The typical, you know, I'm a widow that wants to get rid of a couple $1 million and I need your help kind of stuff. And then the more convoluted stuff where they're calling in and they're acting like they're your credit card company or most recently that one of your relatives has been kidnapped and they need the money to let them go. And that's going on fairly regularly. I listed 10 rules to avoid this. And by the way, I should point out, my father-in-law got hit with one of these things before he died, and I think he dropped something like $10,000 in the hope he was going to win a free Cadillac, and of course he never got the car. It was a scam, but I'm pretty sure he died thinking the car was still coming.
Jeez.
So it's pretty bad. So one of the first things you have to do is just realize it doesn't matter how smart you are, how capable you are, anybody can be scammed. If somebody takes enough time to learn about you, you can be scammed. I'm reminded that Steve Jobs basically conned Carly Fiorina, who was then the CEO of HP, out of her job. It was just a straight scam on the iPod, and he did it the way you get scammed. He gave her something that looked just so great that she couldn't say no. But the reality was it was so bad she shouldn't have said yes.
As I like to say sometimes, don't outthink your common sense. What was your point to number three? Break the script.
So a lot of the stuff is scripted. So the reason I fell for the Sanctuary Belize thing is they would pick you up, they would escort you through, and everything was staged. So it looked like the complex was being built, it was being worked on, progress was being made, it was legitimate. In fact, get to that $100 million level of scam. They scammed a lot of business people, doctors, and the rest. And mostly is because they dropped you in. It's like a magic show. They dropped you in, and all you saw was the trick. And so what you want to do is you want to break the script. So go, in my own case, the reason I discovered it is I went off script. I showed up sometime when I wasn't escorted and took a look at the property when nobody expected me to be there. And, of course, it was pretty much underwater. There was no work going on, and it was obvious that all the activity that I was seeing was only activity that was going on during a tour. It wasn't happening during a real event. And so that was a huge red flag for me. And in fact, thinking back, one of the biggest scams, using Steve Jobs as an example again, was when he was starting Next. He brought in a bunch of investors, and they saw the product running, and they thought it was great, and they gave him the money. They didn't realize that it was all it was basically a VHS movie they were watching with the guy doing the demos. Rehearsed and scripted. Had they just broken the demo up, asked the question between, asked to see something else again, something that would have destroyed the flow, they would immediately have seen it was a tape and not a real demo, and figured out that what they were being presented with wasn't real.
Mm. I'm speaking with tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group, talking about ways to avoid scams. You mentioned, too, an interesting point here, and that's avoid contracts with arbitration clauses.
That was a big thing when I was first coming into contracts. Everybody believed that arbitration clauses were going to be the end-all, be-all. Arbitration was cheaper, would get you through court easier and the rest. But the way it's evolved, it's not cheaper, it's not easier. Basically, instead of a judge and jury, both of which might be sympathetic to your cause, you get an arbitrator who may be an attorney that just has some free time, or a judge that has some free time, but you're not given a jury, you are not given the latitude that you're typically given in a court. And the end result is you end up spending as much money as you would incur in a court because you do discovery, you have to pay for the arbitrator and the rest of it, but you don't get that same advantage you would typically have in going against a larger company.
Thanks, Rob. Tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. It is 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for being with us. By one measure, 61% of employees said they begin slacking off at work in November, with holiday fanfare beginning earlier and earlier every year. How can you avoid that trap, especially when it might be noticeable by, say, the wrong people? We're joined now by Weldon Long, entrepreneur and sales trainer, also author of a book called Consistency Selling. Weldon, what should we keep in mind?
It's hard to stay focused this time of year. We know that people from 30 minutes to a couple hours a day slack off anyway, and this time of year it gets even worse. So the real key is that you have to stay focused on your key priorities. It's more difficult to do this time of the year, but it is something that we can do if we use a few simple ideas.
All right. The boss is out of the office. Maybe, half the staff has Christmas week off. But what are some of these ideas?
Well, the main thing to stay focused on our priorities, it's what we always talk about in the power of consistency and consistency selling. We got to keep those priorities right in front of us. We recommend doing what I call a quiet time ritual to review your key priorities for work every single day, every morning, maybe over your own your coffee each morning. And then as you find yourself kind of wandering away from those priorities each day, in this instance, maybe spending too much time on the phone or shopping online or something like that, you're going to feel that little tug because you told yourself this morning or earlier that morning that you're going to stay focused on your key priorities. The good news is there's a huge opportunity to stay focused on key priorities this time of year and really differentiate yourself, from other people in your department, right? To really show and stand head and shoulders against others.
Can you actually stand out, or are just others not paying that much attention and your hard work might go unnoticed?
Right, that's a great question. And that's what people are concerned about, which, by the way, leads people to tend to want to try to vindicate themselves, like, whoa, look at me, look what I'm doing. And that's about the worst thing we can do, because nobody wants to be that guy, right? You don't want to be the guy trying to say, hey, look at me. You got to let the results, you got to let the productivity, vindicate you, which means, buckle down, keep yourself focused, put your nose to the grindstone and work. And then the productivity sales numbers, whatever the numbers, the measurements are in that department, when people start reviewing them in January, that's where we're going to get noticed. But you have to be willing to do the work and depend on the results to vindicate you without going around saying, hey, look at me, because no one's going to want to talk to you. They'll disinvite you from the Christmas party, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. We're speaking with Weldon Long, entrepreneur and sales trainer, also author of a book called Consistency Selling, and we're talking about how to avoid slacker mode as we head into the holiday season. How about setting yourself up here for the new year? Better habits or something along those lines?
You know, that's a great question. I think probably the single most important question, because whatever's going to happen over the next 6 or 8 weeks is going to happen. The key is to set ourselves up big time for 2019. In my book, The Power of Consistency, I talk about developing a prosperity plan. A prosperity plan is a list of the three key priorities in your life: your major professional goal, your major relationship goal, and your major health goal. You have to identify what those key priorities are going to be. You have to figure out what are the one or two things I got to do every single day, not 100 things, just one or two that I got to do every single day to hit those goals, and then program those in our conscious brain through a process of the quiet time ritual. That's the real key, right? Playing the long term and getting focused and executing on those things for the next year.
Thanks, Weldon. Weldon Long, sales trainer, entrepreneur, and author of a book called Consistency Selling. It is 13 minutes now in front of the hour. On this weekend, glad you're with us. As state regulations on marijuana have relaxed and recreational use has become legal in several places, breweries have been looking for ways to use cannabis or its derivatives in beverages. The players range from conglomerates like Constellation Brands to small craft brewers. More from New York Times freelancer Joshua Bernstein. Josh, how's it work?
There's no alcohol, and the buzz comes from the THC itself. And part of that's the regulations and the laws. The government does not allow people to mix. You can't brew beer and brew THC beer in the same facility.
Okay.
That's just not possible legally. And so people are finding their own ways to go about doing it. And the other crazy case study that's happening now is, you know, the gentleman that created Blue Moon. Blue Moon, one of the most famous Belgian beers in all of America. He left that company, Miller Coors, at the beginning of the year to found Saria Beverages, and he's making non-alcohol. He's basically brewing a beer, removing the alcohol, then they're dosing with THC. And so they're making sort of, you know, beer that for all intents and purposes tastes like beer in the same sense that non-alcoholic beer would taste like beer. But then it's being dosed, the alcohol is removed and dosed with THC, so you get this beer that tastes like beer, smells like beer. It doesn't smell like marijuana. And then, but the effect that you're getting is not derived from alcohol, but the effect is derived from THC.
In that case, then, if you drink too much, are you buzzed or are you high?
You know what I mean. I think those phrases are kind of like interchangeable on there too. You know, I would say buzz, high. They're all about the idea of one thing. I think buzz tends to think about like your first experience with any sort of, you know, with a beer. You know, your first beer gives you a little buzz, and then if you have six, you'll get drunk. And I think with any, I'm not a scientist in this, I can't say this, but I can tell you there is a limit to the human body to experience good times, no matter what you're doing. be it eating too many hot dogs or drinking too many THC beers, there's a limit.
It's a great story. We're speaking with Joshua Bernstein, New York Times freelance journalist, and he's got a piece entitled "For a Buck and Sometimes a Buzz." Brewers are putting cannabis into cans. All right, so you touched on it before. What about the legalities here? What about in places where, say, recreational marijuana is not legal? Do brewers have the ability to take some of those ingredients you mentioned and make beer that way?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think you can take some of the ingredients in the sense that for the Georgia and Sweetwater Brewing out of Atlanta, Georgia, what they are doing is taking the terpenes and like the aromatics and the flavors to kind of recreate the experience, but without the sort of psychoactive properties, because things are not legal in Georgia in the same way. And then CBD, a number of brewers are playing around with CBD as well, too, such as Coalition Brewing in Oregon. It does a number of CBD-infused beers. But then that kind of goes back, that's a bit more of CBD's become such a darling of the wellness industry, but it's a little bit more complicated if you're putting something inside beer, because the TTB, the government, needs to sign off on the label, and oftentimes these are considered special ingredients, you need formula approval, and the government on a nationwide scale isn't really ready to sign off on all these things yet.
Thanks, Josh. New York Times freelancer Joshua Bernstein. It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Thanks for being with us. Some 52,000 people from around the world ran the New York City Marathon 3 weeks ago. Two of those runners came together at mile 16, and it changed each other's lives. CBS News says 41-year-old Christy Elfering, an ultra-marathon runner from Minnesota, fell to the ground after running over the Queensboro Bridge into Manhattan. She was having a heart attack. Her friend Victoria, who had traveled to New York to run the race with her, called out for help. That's when Dr. Ted Strange fatefully ran by. Mr. Strange, a 60-year-old father from Staten Island, New York, dodged oncoming runners and made his way over to the pair. Ms. Elfering did not have a pulse. First responders ran from the sidelines and helped. It took the team 4 tries with a defibrillator to resuscitate her. Ms. Elfering recovered. The doc wound up finishing the race, of course, in a daze. And the two had a tearful reunion recently. She now wears a portable defibrillator and has experienced cardiac episodes since the race. Doc's message here, even though she was extremely healthy and was used to running very long distances, heart problems can be genetic. So pay attention. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to GEICO. GEICO could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.